Greetings and salutations, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another chapter of Science News Update with me, Jim Campanella. Tonight's episode is a bit different from the previous several episodes that I've sent off to you. Previously, I let the news of the day sort of direct me in my presentations to you. Tonight, I decided to set the tone myself with a bit of self-direction. My decision on tonight's news stories was based on two things that occurred. First, a conversation with my brother-in-law, who is a psychologist and social worker. And second, I finally finished the novel Glass House by Charles Stross, a book that I was very impressed by until, in my opinion, the ending went off the rails a bit and was not as thoroughly satisfying as it could have been. Also, I could not help but think of Peter Watts' Starship Sofa commentary every time one of the characters was disassembled and backed up onto a computer memory and then reassembled. By the end, it kind of creeped me out, truthfully. But this is not a literary critique, and I'm not qualified as a literary critic. What is the point that I am so painfully trying to make? And what did Glass House and my conversation with my brother-in-law have in common? To put it simply, they both brought up memory and memory erasure, that is, induced memory loss as a therapeutic agent. First, in the book Glass House, the main character, Robin, and many of the other characters, have had their memories purposely erased of many of the most traumatic recollections that they have undergone over the last few years of a dreadful war. This memory erasure is not only common, but an accepted way of dealing with trauma in Strauss's post-singular society in which people live hundreds of years and are essentially immortal. As a biologist, I was fascinated by the idea of being able to go in and surgically remove specific bits and pieces of memory in order to bring about the psychological well-being of a person. While I think the idea of being able to alter synaptic relationships and structure is seriously cool, at the same time, the idea is also very disturbing because of its possible exploitation and misuse. One of my favorite SF authors, Jack Chalker, actually wrote extensively on the abuse of such technology long before Strauss did. But at the very same time, the value of such an ability would be beyond measure in a clinical setting. I would have pretty much, forgotten about that memory erasure stuff at that point, if it was not for the curious conversation with my brother-in-law, Jerome. Jerome told me that some drug companies are presently in the testing stages of pharmaceuticals that actually do have the ability to help erase or remove old long-term memories of traumas. He told me that since those old memories only stay alive if reinforced and obsessed upon, the drugs can help to weaken that reinforcement. The drugs are supposed to help remove the traumas and aid patients with recovery of their mental health once the root cause of their problems is gone. In short, the drugs induce those synaptic patterns to become memories of memories, and hence to eventually be forgotten. The so-called talking cure of Freud's can take years to get to that point. So it's obviously a major potential breakthrough in mental health treatment. That conversation brought to mind Strauss, since I was still in the process of reading Glass House at that time. It didn't take much to remind me of Strauss and his surgeon confessors who act as therapists after memory redaction. So I just had to delve into the science literature and find out, what is the latest status of drugs and technique that can erase memory? We are certainly nowhere near Strauss's society where a memory may be redacted like a surgeon removing a mole, but where are we on that spectrum? First, let me point out that we are not talking about brainwashing or hypnosis or anything oddly radical. Yes, you can cause serious memory loss or even stimulation of false memories if you screw up the patient's worldview with hallucinogens and additional mental trauma. But we are not talking Manchurian candidate stuff here. We're talking about pharmaceutically getting rid of self-reinforcing and potentially nightmarish memories that the patient would be happier to be rid of. Not harrowing, deprogramming, or reprogramming of any kind. Is there anything out there that can erase memories and help you to forget? I mean, besides the temporary oblivion of 8 scotch and sodas. There are several things, actually, but let's start with a chemical that may seem a bit odd, because it's a sugar. You would not expect a sugar to affect memory, but if it's the correct sugar, it will. Long-term memory is enhanced as a result of the strengthening of neuronal connections and the remodeling of the way that synapses of the brain are attached to one another. Fucose-1,2-galactose is a sugar that is used as part of the proteins in neuronal cells and as a kind of molecular placekeeper to ensure that neuronal growth is accomplished and accomplished in the correct three-dimensional manner. Proteins do much of the work in cells, but sometimes glycoproteins, that is, proteins with sugars attached into a single molecule, are just as important. When deoxy-D-galactose, another sugar, is given to brain cells, it can block the incorporation of the fucose-galactose into the glycoprotein as they are being produced. Not only are the non-standard glycoproteins produced, but memory loss is induced as well. Yes, you can induce amnesia with the treatment of the brain cells with this sugar. Stacy Calovadouris and her collaborators found this out in 2005 and published their results in the Journal of the American Chemical Society. The D-type galactose reduces neuronal extension and synapse formation. Why? Researchers still do not entirely understand what's happening at the molecular level in the treated neurons. Calovadouris has suggested that two major brain synapse proteins, in fact called synapsin 1A and 1B, are involved in neurotransmitter release and synaptogenesis, that's the creation or the growth of synapses, and that DGAL actually blocks their fucosylation. And once that fucosylation is blocked, fucosylation, the addition of the fucose sugar, once it's blocked, their full activity leading to synaptic changes is blocked as well. Also, since we don't know exactly what's going on there, a Chinese group led by Jay Liu in 2007 in the Journal of Biochemistry and Pharmacology suggested that high levels of D-galactose in the bloodstream actually cause oxidative stress, which causes extensive changes in synaptic morphology by inducing something called programmed cell death. In rats, they found that the greater the levels of D-galactose in the bloodstream, the worse the effects on long-term memory. Well, that sounds pretty bad, but the amnesia is reversible. Once you actually take away or allow the D-galactose to be broken down, the memory comes back. Since its discovery several years ago, drug companies have been experimenting with D-galactose compounds and decided that if treated over a long enough period, along with some directed memory D-enforcement, then it's possible to help humans forget the nasty bits of their past. I don't know exactly how successful they're going to be, nor can I predict the long-term effects of this treatment, but it should be interesting to see how it turns out. By the way, just a tiny bit off topic, you may remember from your high school chemistry classes that molecules actually may be left-handed or right-handed. This is something called chirality. For example, the building blocks of every protein in our body are left-handed, and they've been that way for several billion years. Sugars, on the other hand, have been primarily right-handed for the same amount of time. It seems kind of odd, therefore, that D-galactose, which is right-handed, has such a nasty physiological effect, despite being a pretty simple sugar that is found normally. You would have expected such an effect from its left-handed mirror image, not the right-handed version. Another treatment that can extinguish or redact memory is one that works in another area of the brain, the amygdala. There's evidence that the amygdala plays an important role in emotional conditioning, so it wouldn't be an obvious target for treatment in so-called experimental extinction of memory. The brain neurotransmitter gamma-aminobutyric acid, called GABA for short, G-A-B-A, is actually thought to play an important role in damping down or inhibiting so-called aversive memories in the amygdala. When a chemical called musimol was administered, the aversive memories were actually weakened in rats. See, the musimol turns on GABA receptors in the neuron. That means that by inducing the neurons to think that GABA is present in the brain, the bad memories were blocked from getting into long-term memory. When those receptors were actually blocked chemically so they couldn't turn on, there was no memory loss. Again, a better understanding of how GABA causes this memory block in the amygdala could lead to treatments for phobias, panic disorders, even post-traumatic stress disorders. So I've got one more example of a memory-zapping drug that may be in our future. GABA causes a memory block at the amygdala in the midbrain, but the next drug does its work on the forebrain. or the neocortex. And the neocortex is presumed to be the ultimate repository of many types of long-term memory. The neocortex is the most recently evolved of all the brain structures, and the one that's responsible for us being the big-brained apes that we are. It's involved in higher functions like sensory perception, the generation of motor commands, spatial reasoning, conscious thought, and in humans, language. The researchers Shema, Saktor, and Dudai, in late 2007, wrote a paper in the journal Science entitled "Rapid Erasure of Long-Term Memory Associations in the Cortex by an Inhibitor of PKM-Zeta." Now, if that is not a scary title, I don't know what is. So what is PKM and why is inhibiting it so bad? Well, PKM is the enzyme protein kinase M. The kinase PKM-Zeta is specifically expressed or made in the neocortex of the brain. Now, a kinase is an enzyme that adds phosphates to other molecules. And a phosphate is a phosphorus molecule with several oxygens attached. Now, one thing that most people don't think about is how a cell can signal enzymes and long, complicated pathways to be turned on and off. Well, there are a myriad of ways this can be done, but one of the main ways that activation and deactivation of signals can be transferred is by the use of phosphorylation. By adding a phosphate onto a protein, it may activate or deactivate it, depending on the situation and what protein it is. Because protein kinases have profound effects on a cell, their activity is highly regulated. Kinases themselves are turned on and off by phosphorylation, sometimes by the kinase itself in a process called autophosphorylation, or by binding to activator proteins or inhibitor proteins or small molecules, or by controlling the location in the cell relative to their substrates. Deregulated kinase activity, that is, a kinase that's no longer functioning correctly, is a frequent cause of disease, particularly cancer, where kinases regulate many of the aspects that control cell growth and movement and death. So the upshot is that phosphorylation is pretty important in cell signaling. This brings us back to the experiment. So what did Shema, Saktor, and Dudai do? Well, they injected taste aversion conditioned rats with a protein kinase inhibitor called ZIP. Now, ZIP stands for Z inhibitory peptide. In this case, the ZIP very specifically kept the protein kinase M-zeta enzyme from functioning. Within a very short time, the rats forgot how much they hated the taste of lithium chloride. The rats, however, were still able to learn and remember to become averse to other things. So the ZIP did not block their ability to remember new things, just erase their long-term memory. It's a bit like wiping part of a hard drive on a computer but leaving the RAM intact. By the way, shouldn't it be called unzip and not zip if it erases memory? Okay, sorry for the bad joke. Here is the scary thing, folks. This treatment, unlike the first two, does cause permanent memory loss. The ZIP treatment permanently erased a long-term memory in the rat neocortex. Okay, well, I guess that's great, huh? We finally found a treatment that works. Works quickly, works very efficiently. Unfortunately, it does not seem very selective. The ZIP caused the loss of the aversion memory, but it's unclear what other memories it may have done away with as well. The loss of random memories is not something that most of us would consider a good thing. The study of Shema and the rest suggests that long-term memory storage in the cortex requires constant maintenance, in which the presence of PKM-zeta is crucial. It's possible that PKM-zeta activity sustains synaptic contacts and that disrupting the process may actually cause memory to disappear. But again, researchers don't know exactly what's going on here at the molecular level. It's not even clear what memories the loss of the PKM-zeta activity redacts, or if there's any kind of specificity. As I noted previously, you don't want random memories eradicated. The researchers are still trying to figure out whether it is just taste memories or whether it's more general than that. At any rate, the findings at least offer the possibility that manipulating PKM-zeta might be used therapeutically to eliminate long-term memories. Certainly PKM sounds like the most direct manipulator of memories that I've reported on so far, so it must be the best clinical hope presently, right? Truthfully, I have no idea. I'm not sure any other researcher has a better idea than me. But one thing is for sure, I'm making this sound way too simple. As any real neurobiologist or pharmaceutical psychiatrist will tell you, this stuff is complicated. We're talking about altering and changing the most complex organ that there is. We're not talking about removing an appendix or even a heart. We are talking about the most evanescent of all things in the universe, memory. How do you gently redact memory, and will it ever really be possible to just get rid of the bad bits and leave the good? I suppose that once we can actually upload our memories into a computer, as in Strauss's future, along with ourselves, that we will finally have a complete control over every memory circuit, good and bad. Post-singular humans, if you really want to call them human at that point, will have that advantage. But if you read The Glass House or other post-singular views of the future, just having the ability to remove bad memories may not make our lives any easier. In fact, it will complicate our lives beyond belief, because once you start to remove memories, they can be just as easily replaced with ones that may or may not be true. Truthfully, it gives me the shivers. Well, thanks for listening. As always, take care, and I hope I've inspired some of you. Until next time, this is Jim Campanella.